Today we come to the temperaments. Paragraph 74. So there are six kinds of temperaments. Greedy temperament, hating temperament, deluded temperament, faithful temperament, intelligent temperament, and speculative temperament. On this sheet, the second column represents the six temperaments, and the first line, charita, means temperament, and there are dosa, raga, saddha, buddhi, moha, vitaka, and so on. So greedy temperament is raga, and hating temperament dosa, deluded temperament moha, faithful temperament saddha, intelligent temperament buddhi. Buddhi is a synonym of jnana or panya, knowledge, wisdom. And speculative temperament is vitaka. And some teachers say there are more than six kinds of temperaments and a mixture of them and so on. So they are not so much interesting because they are confusing. So we take only, following the the order, we take six temperaments. And three are good temperaments and three are bad temperaments. And each one of them has parallel in another group. So faithful temperament is parallel to greedy temperament. Because faith is strong when profitable karma occurs in one of greedy temperament, owing to its special qualities being near to those of greed. That means greed is similar to faith or saddha, because in an unprofitable way, greed is affectionate and not over austere, and so in a profitable way is faith. In fact, instead of saying in an unprofitable way, we should say on the side of unprofitable states, so on the side of akusala. So it means among akusala, greed is affectionate and not over austere. And in among kusala states, faith has the same quality. Faith is affectionate and not austere. So they are similar. So with intelligent temperament and hating temperament, they are also similar. So a person who habitually gets angry may be of intelligent temperament. That there are some people who are short-tempered and get angry for a very small reason, and those people may be sharp in their intelligence. So they are similar or they are parallel. And in paragraph 76, the last sentence, and hate occurs in the mode of condemning living beings. The Pali word here is avoid. Does condemn mean avoid?
No. Condemn means judge.
I see. But here, avoiding. So hate occurs in the mode of avoiding living beings, while understanding occurs in the mode of avoiding formations. Formations means mind and matter, sankhara. And then speculative temperament has its parallel in deluded or moha temperament. They are similar. And then the source or cause of these temperaments. A discussion on the source of temperaments. Here also, first the author gives the reason given by other teachers, and then he said they are all inconclusive or indecisive. Now, on page 104, paragraph 80, as some say, so there is a footnote. Some is said with reference to the elder Upadesa, for it is put in this way by him in the Vimutti Magga. Now, there was a book called Vimutti Magga, and it was written before Visuddhi Magga. And it was written by an elder named Upadesa, and it was written in Pali language. There is a book by Professor Babat, a comparative study of Visuddhi Magga and Vimutti Magga. And in the sub-commentary to Visuddhi Magga, we call Visuddhi Magga a commentary, although it is not a commentary of one particular sutta or one particular collection. It is a common commentary of all sutras. So we call Visuddhi Magga a commentary. And so there is a sub-commentary on Visuddhi Magga. And the name of the elder as well as the name of the book was mentioned in the sub-commentary. So in the Visuddhi Magga itself, nothing is mentioned, just say some say. So some refers to the elder Upadesa, who wrote the book Vimutti Magga. So in that book, it is said that there are three kinds of temperament to begin with, have their source in previous habit, and they have their source in the element and humors. Elements mean the four great elements, earth element, water element, and so on. And humors, what's humors?
Moods, dispositions.
Yeah. Here, humors means something in the body, wind, phlegm, yeah. And what is the other thing?
Wild.
Something like that.
The humors.
Blood. Are they called humors?
In medieval England they had that kind of.
Yes. So they are the sources for the kinds of temperaments. So and previous habits and also the elements and humors. And apparently one of greedy temperament has formerly had plenty of desirable tasks and gratifying work to do, or has reappeared here, that means reborn here, after dying in heaven. So a person who dies as a deva and then reborn as a human being, he tends to have the greedy temperament. And one of hating temperament has formerly had plenty of stabbing and torturing and brutal work to do, or has appeared here after dying in one of the hells or the Naga existences. So one who is reborn after dying from hell or after dying from the existence of serpents tends to have hating temperament. And one of deluded temperament has formerly drunk a lot of intoxicants and neglected learning and questioning, or has reappeared here after dying in the animal existence. So this is according to the previous habit. And then they are explained according to the elements. The person is of deluded temperament because two elements are prominent, that is to say the earth element and fire element and so on. So one who has these elements prominent in his body. So if the, that person tends to become diluted temperament and so on. But not all those who have plenty of desirable tasks and gratifying work to do and who have reappeared here after dying and in heaven are of greedy temperament and so on. So they are not conclusive. But the other gives the exposition given by the teachers of the commentary. That means given by the Theravada tradition. And they said that the fact that these beings have prominence of greed, prominence of hate, prominence of delusion, prominence of non-greed, non-hate and non-delusion, and that is governed by previous root cause. For when in one man, at the moment of his accumulating rebirth-producing karma, greed is strong and non-greed is weak, non-hate and non-delusion are strong and hate and delusion are weak, then his weak non-greed is unable to prevail over his greed, but his non-hate and non-delusion being strong are able to prevail over his hate and delusion. That is why on being reborn through rebirth linking given by that karma, he has greed, is good-natured and unangry, and possesses understanding with knowledge like a lightning flash. Now, at the moment of his accumulating rebirth-producing karma, greed is strong and non-greed is weak. Here, it does not mean that the karma and greed or non-greed arise at the same time or at the same moment. Because greed is unwholesome mental state and non-greed is wholesome mental state. So they cannot arise together. And the karma which gives results as relinking in human existence and so on is good karma, kusala, I mean wholesome karma, and it cannot be unwholesome karma. So when kusala karma arises in our minds, there can be no greed arising at the same time. But he has greed before and after that karma. So that is what is meant here as at the moment of his accumulating karma. Not they arise at the same time, at the same moment, but they are, the karma is influenced by, say, strong greed and non-greed and so on. So when at the moment of accumulating karma, greed is strong and non-greed is weak and so on, then there is this difference in being of different temperament. Okay. So these are explained with reference to which root causes or which hetus are predominant or strong and weak at the moment of accumulating good or bad karma, especially good karma. And then we go to how it is to be known that this person is of greedy temperament and so on. So this is something like psychology. So we guess the temperament of a person by the posture he takes, by the action, by his manner of eating, by his seeing, and by the kind of states occurring in his mind. So they are explained in detail. Now, when one of greedy temperament is walking in his usual manner, he walks carefully, and that means he walks gracefully. Puts his foot down slowly, puts it down evenly, lifts it up evenly, and his step is springy. What is springy?
Bouncing?
Oh. The explanation given in the footnote is that the footprint, you know, when Buddha left a footprint, then his footprint is even. There is no, what do you call?
Dent.
No dent. But the footprint of ordinary people have something not touching equal evenly. So springy means not touching in the middle. That is springy.
So well, by the Buddha was flat-footed.
That's right. Yes, it says said to be flat-footed. And one of hating temperament walks as though he were digging with the point of his feet, puts his foot down quickly, lifts it up quickly, and his step is dragged along. And deluded temperament walks with a perplexed guide, puts his foot down hesitantly, lifts it up hesitantly, and his step is pressed down suddenly. And then a verse. And this is said in the account of the origin of the Margandeya Sutta. In that sutta, the name of the man was Margandeya, and he had a beautiful daughter. So he wanted to give his beautiful daughter to a deserving man, but he had not found one yet. So one day he saw the footprints of the Buddha, and so he knew that this footprint belongs to an extraordinary man. So he followed the footprints and he came to the Buddha and offered his daughter to the Buddha. So this verse was uttered by him when he saw the footprint of the Buddha. So it was not of a greedy person, it was not of a hating person, it was not of a deluded person, but it must belong to a very extraordinary person. And then in paragraph 89, about the middle of the paragraph, and he sleeps in a confident manner. Actually, he sleeps in a pleasant manner, pleasant to look at, something like that, not confident. And a little farther down, with his body flung down, he sleeps with a skull. What is skull?
Skull?
Yeah.
Frown?
Yes, with a frown, that's right. And then two lines down, one of the deluded temperaments spread his bed all. How do you pronounce that?
Awry.
Awry. That means.
Not symmetrical. All over.
Right. Yes. Ah, that's right. And sleep mostly face downwards with his body sprawling. And when he works, he gets up slowly, saying whom. So this is by his posture or deportment. Now by action, also in the acts of sitting, etc., one of greedy temperament grasps the broom well and he sits cleanly and evenly without hurrying or scattering the sand as if he were strewing sindhu water flowers, as a kind of flowers. So we can guess his temperament from looking how he swept. But it is not possible in this country, because you use sucking machines,
vacuum
cleaners. And then by eating, one of greedy temperament likes eating rich, sweet food. So those who like sweet food are said to be of greedy temperament. And one of hating temperament, he likes eating rough, sour food. So if you like sour food, you may be one of a hating temperament. And if you are not decided, you have no settled choice, then you are of a deluded temperament. So what do you like? Like sour food. And then by seeing and so on, when one of greedy temperament sees even a slightly pleasing visible object, he looks long as if surprised. He seizes on trivial virtues, discounts genuine faults, and when departing, he does so with regret, as if unwilling to leave. With regret, the actual word used is with attachment. He has attachment, or he has something like a concern for that object.
Attachment?
Attachment, yes. And one of hating temperaments is even a slightly unpleasing visible object. He avoids looking long as if he were tired. He picks out trivial faults, discounts genuine virtues, and when departing, he does so without attachment or regret, as if anxious to leave, and so on. Oh, then, for the deluded, if he hears others criticizing, he criticizes. If he hears others praising, he praises. But actually, he feels equanimity in himself. I want to use indifference instead of equanimity. Mm-hmm. So indifference in himself, the indifference of unknowing. So here indifference means not knowing, moha. So too with sounds and so on. And then by the kind of states occurring, one of greedy temperament, there is frequent occurrence of such states as deceit, fraud, pride, evilness of wishes, greatness of wishes, discontent, foppery, and personal vanity, and so on. And then for the faithful temperament, there is frequent occurrence of such states as free generosity, desire to see noble ones, desire to hear the good Dhamma, and great gladness. In the original, it means of frequent gladness. So he gets gladness frequently, not necessarily great. And then on page 109, bottom line, things suitable for those of different temperaments. So, for one of greedy temperament, a suitable lodging is unwashed, sealed and stands level with the ground, and it can be either an overhanging rock with an unprepared bricklage, a grass hut or a leaf house, etc. It ought to be splattered with dirt, full of beds, dilapidated, too high or too low. It is opposite of his temperament. He is of a greedy temperament, and so it is suitable. Bed lodging is suitable for him. And then with regard to the bowl, because he's talking about monks, and the right kind of bowl for him is an ugly clay bowl, disfigured by stoppings and joints, or a heavy and misshapen iron bowl, as unappetizing as a skull. Now, some words are misplaced here. And the right kind of bowl for him is an ugly clay bowl, or a heavy and misshapen iron bowl, disfigured by stoppings and joints.
I see.
Because if an ugly clay bowl has defects, then he has to throw it away, because it may have cracks and it's difficult to make amends. But an iron bowl, if it becomes if it has holes or something, then you can put rivets or stoppings and joints to keep the bowl together. So a heavy and misshapen, disfigured by stoppings and joints, should qualify the heavy and misshapen iron bowl. And on page 111, paragraph 101, the right lodging for one of deluded temperament has a view and is not shut in, where the four quarters are visible to him as he sits there. He is of deluded temperament, so he needs space, large space. As to the postures, walking is right. The right kind of object for his contemplation is not small, That is to say, the size of a winnowing basket or the size of a saucer. That means not the size of a winnowing basket or not the size of a saucer. Those are small, small objects. But a person of deluded temperament needs large objects. Suppose he wants to practice earth kasina meditation, looking at the earth disk or earth. So if he is of a deluded temperament, he needs to have a big plot of land or something to look at, not just a small earth disk, because his mind needs to look at a larger object. So the object for his contemplation is not small, that is to say, not the size of a winnowing basket or not the size of a saucer. For his mind becomes more confused in a confined space. So the right kind is an amply large kasina. Maybe about the size of a tennis court or football, maybe a football field. The rest is as stated for one of hating temperament. That's correct. And for the speculative, for a person of speculative temperament, the small one is right. So for a person of vitakka temperament, because he is speculative, he wants to think of many things. So for him, a small object is suitable, about the size of a winnowing basket or the size of a saucer. The rest is as stated for one greedy temperament. And these are the details with definition of the kind, source recognition, and what is suitable, and so on. Now, we come to the 40 subjects of meditation now. So the 40 subjects are given in paragraphs 104 and the following. So 10 kasinas, the meaning of the word kasina means all or total. So when you look at the disc, you look at the whole disc, so whole or total. 10 kasinas and 10 kinds of foulness, 10 recollections, 4 divine abidings, 4 immaterial states, 1 perception, 1 defining. So altogether 40 subjects. These are the 40 subjects of Samatha meditation. Here the 10 kasinas are these: earth kasina, water kasina, fire kasina, air kasina, blue kasina, yellow kasina, red kasina, white kasina, light kasina, and limited space kasina. So there are 10 kasinas. And how to prepare for this kasina and how to practice will be explained in the next chapter. The 10 kinds of recollections are these: recollection of the Buddha, that means the recollection of the qualities of the Buddha, recollection of the Dhamma, recollection of the Sangha, recollection of virtue, that means one's own sila, recollection of generosity, recollection of deities, recollection or mindfulness of death, and then mindfulness occupied with the body, mindfulness of breathing, and recollection of peace. Peace here means Nibbana. These are the 10 recollections. And then the 4 divine abidings are these: loving-kindness, compassion, gladness or sympathetic joy, and equanimity. The 4 immaterial states are these: the base consisting of boundless space. The 4 immaterial states are just the 4 arupa vachara, the formless types of consciousness there. The base consisting of boundless consciousness, the base consisting of nothingness, and the base consisting of neither perception nor non-perception. The one perception is a perception of repulsiveness in nutriment or in food. The one defining is the defining of the 4 elements. That means trying to see the 4 elements clearly, one different from the other. So this is earth element, this is water element, and so on. This is how the exposition should be understood as to enumeration. So These are the list of 40 subjects of Samatha meditation. As to which bring access only and which absorption. Now, the Samadhi, if you remember, is divided into different kinds. And there is a division into neighborhood samadhi or neighborhood concentration and or excess concentration and absorption concentration. Some subjects of meditation can lead to excess concentration only and not to absorption, and the others can lead to absorption also. So to which, as to which bring excess only and which absorption. The eight recollections, accepting mindfulness occupied with the body and mindfulness of breathing, the perception of repulsiveness and nutriment, and the defining of the four elements, are 10 meditation subjects that bring access only. You may look at the chart here. And you look at the jhana column, the last column. If we say no jhana, that means they can lead only to excess concentration. They cannot lead to jhana concentration. So if you practice the recollection of the Buddha, you may get just the concentration of mind, but you will not get jhana through that type of meditation, because the qualities of the Buddhas are profound, and there are many qualities to keep your mind on. And so it cannot help you to get real strong concentration or to get jhana. So the eight recollections, the perception of repulsiveness and nutriment, and the defining of four elements can lead you to the gaining of excess concentration only. You will not get jhana if you practice those meditations. Eight, then one perception and one defining. So you look at no jhana. Or if you look at here, AP means absorption development. P means preliminary, and UP means excess, and AB means absorption. The others bring absorption. So the others, if you practice the other subjects of meditation, you can gain jhana, so absorption. Then as to the kind of jhana, again, please look at the jhana column. Among those that bring absorption, the 10 kasinas, together with mindfulness of breathing, bring all four jhanas. Four means here five. Because, you know, there are two ways of describing jhanas, according to fourfold method and fivefold method. We are familiar with fivefold method, right? First jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana, fifth jhana. But in Visuddhimagga and in many suttas, only fourfold method is mentioned. So we have to adapt this. So bring all four jhanas means bring all five jhanas. So the 10 kasinas can bring, or if you practice one of the 10 kasinas, you can get first jhana, second, third, fourth, fifth, so you can get all five jhanas. And then breathing.
Breathing only here is the first jhana.
No, the breathing is there.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Okay. So first to fifth.
I see.
That is... this kayakadasati means contemplating on different parts of the body, like head hair, body hair, nail, teeth, skin, and so on.
And what's this last one?
Yeah, that is breathing.
And what's
this? Anapana.
Uh-huh, this one's okay.
Oh, peace is this. Upasamana, this is peace.
I see. That's what it is.
The order is a little different. So this is peace. And Marana is on death.
Yeah, oh, okay.
That is on death.
Okay, now I'm trying.
Ten kinds of foulness together with mindfulness occupied with the body bring the first jhana. So ten asubhas, this ten, and this one, kayagatasati, and lead to first jhana only. Because the object is gross, and so you need vitaka to keep your mind on the object. Without vitaka, mind cannot dwell on this object. It is explained as when you are going against a strong current, then you need some pole, say to keep the boat going. And in the same way, since the objects are gross, you need vitaka for your consciousness or mind to be on the object. Then foulness meditation, and you look at the corpse, and so these objects are gross. So they lead to first jhana only. The first three divine abidings bring three jhanas. That means you have four jhanas. First, second, third, fourth. Metta, karuna, and mudita. And then the last one, the four divine abiding, upekha. And the four immaterial states, arupavachara, bring the fourth jhana. That means fifth jhana. So upekha can lead to fifth jhana, and these four also to fifth jhana. So as to the kind of jhana, they are to be understood that way. As to surmounting means overcoming. There are two kinds of surmounting. Surmounting the factors of jhana and surmounting the object. That means you have got first jhana. Now, if you want to get second jhana, you have to overcome or you have to eliminate the first factor, vitaka. So, surmounting really means eliminating. By eliminating factors, you get higher jhanas. So, first you get the first jhana, and it has five factors. Then, if you want to get the second jhana, you have to eliminate one factor. Then if you want to get the third jhana, you have to eliminate one more, and so on. So the rupa vachara jhanas are those surmounting factors. And arupa vachara jhanas are those surmounting objects. Because in all the four arupa vachara jhanas, there are only two factors. So there is no difference of factors in the four arupa vachara jhanas. But what makes them different is the object they take. So if you want to get the first arupa vachara jhana, you have to overcome or you have to surmount the kasina sign, because kasina sign is the object of rupa vachara jhanas. Then if you want to get the second arupa vachara jhana, you have to overcome the first arupa vachara jhana, and so on. So here, by surmounting or by eliminating objects, you get higher jhanas. So there are two kinds of surmounting. Surmounting of factors and surmounting of objects.
Let's go to the side, this question.
Yes.
So basically, these chapters on concentration are on shamatha.
Yes.
And when these chapters on knowledge will be vipassana, and they're both meditations. But because I guess the problem is, when I think of samadhi also includes vipassana, doesn't it?
That's right, yes.
And this concentration is the translation of samadhi. So that's where I get confused when I think this chapter is on meditation. But actually, the third chapter is also on meditation.
Yeah, actually, the third chapter is on meditation.
I mean, the third block. I mean.
No.
No.
Okay. Beginning with this chapter, the third chapter.
Right.
We come to meditation. Right. But the third chapter is just the preparation. you have not gone into meditation, but then you have to purify your virtue, and then you have to cut the impediments, and then find a teacher, get the meditation subject, and so on. So you are preparing for the practice of meditation in this chapter. You have not come to the real practice yet. And this meditation is the Samatha meditation. So until maybe chapter 13, at the end of chapter 13 or somehow, is...
chapter 14 begins...
the
third section, let's remember the third section.
Yeah. So from the... Actually, chapter 14 does not deal with vipassana yet, but the basis for vipassana. So vipassana actually begins with...
15th purification of you.
That's right.
Chapter 18.
Let me see. Purification of you, chapter 18.
And that's when we begin to get vipassana.
From there we get vipassana.
So this is an important confusion that I always come up against, because when I think of meditation or samadhi, I think of both shamatha and vipassana. But in the Visuddhimagga, when you talk about samadhi, they're actually just talking about shamatha.
That's right, yes. The three steps, sila, samadhi, and panya. So samadhi is samadhi is here synonymous with samatha meditation. But we need samadhi in vipassana meditation too. But that's a technical term. Then samadhi means samatha meditation.
For instance, we're Zen, and we think of ourselves as a meditation school, but in a sense, we're actually a wisdom school in this ranching, because we do vipassana. We're closer to vipassana style meditation.
Yes.
Than,
yeah. Okay. And as to extension and non-extension, that means whether you can extend the sign you have got into in your mind, or whether it is not possible, or whether it is not beneficial to extend. So when you have got the image of the for example, when you have got the image of the casino in your mind, then you can expand it. First, the casino, this may be about, say, 8 inches across diameter or 10 inches diameter. You look at it and you try to get it in your mind. And when you have really got the image in your mind and you can see it with your eyes closed, then you dwell upon it again and again. And when it becomes clearer, refined, then you can expand it for as large as you like. So some subjects of meditation can be expanded and some cannot. So there are 10 kasinas among those 40 subjects need be extended. That means you can extend, you need to extend them, because it is by way of extending the sign of the counterpart sign that you become able to hear sounds or see things in that area. Suppose you extend your